Live from State Street in the heart of Chicago, you are listening to the new home of the Chicago Bears, ESPN Chicago. And this is Black and Abdallah, WMVP, WSHE, HD2, Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
It's Black and Abdallah here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Tyler Aki is filling in for Adam Abdallah tonight. We're going to talk some Bears football here at 312-332-3776. Just to update the NCAA tournament, the Sweet 16 on the men's side. Clemson in Arizona at halftime. Clemson leads 39-31. And with 9 minutes left to go in the first half, UConn and San Diego State. UConn's up 27-19. There's also two other games to tip off later on this evening. We'll break those down in just a little bit because Tyler is the expert on college basketball. He'll get you set for the rest of the Sweet 16 matchups in college basketball. But let's talk Bears because Patrick Finley had a piece on the Sun Times earlier today, Tyler, talking about what the Bears are going to do with the ninth pick and how Ryan Poles is kind of telling his group that works for him, his scouts, his coaches, and kind of handling the way they're approaching this ninth pick overall as they're trying to figure out what to do.
Right, and I think it's kind of like a cool concept. I think it's something that if I was working in a football front office, it would be fun. It feels like he's kind of divvying everything up among the different groups of coaches and scouts and stuff and says, all right, convince me. Convince me what we should do at nine, whether it's receivers or offensive line or whether it's a defensive lineman or edge rusher. I think that is, and it feels like that's always been the way that Ryan Poles has been. Everything's been collaborative. It's never been, I am the one that has the final say and what I do is what I think is what we're going to do. No, it feels like everything's been a collaborative process. Obviously, he's the general manager. He's the head honcho. He does get the final say. But it doesn't feel like a Ryan Pace situation where you had people going behind other people's backs and stuff like that. No, this feels very collaborative. I remember his first draft. And these are seventh rounders, so they really don't make that big of an impact.
Right.
But he traded back to get a ton of picks in the seventh round. And he basically said on the last day of the draft, hey, everybody come up to me. Everyone gets a post-it note. Put a prospect you love that's still around. Put it on the post-it note and put it up on this board, and we'll take a look at it, and we'll try to accumulate as many seventh rounders so we can go out and get some of these guys so we don't have to try to bid for them in undrafted free agency. And I think that's the collaborative process we've seen. He credits Ian Cunningham a ton for a lot of the moves that are made, especially those with the Eagles. And I think that's what you want in a general manager, a guy who's – we talk about it all the time. What was one of the biggest criticisms of the White Sox is that – we funnel everything from within. Everything's done from within. We hire from within. We don't go out and branch out. The Bears, it feels like it's a very different process that's taking place right now with Ryan Poles.
So the piece on the Sun Times by Patrick Finley talks about how Ryan Poles plans to break his staff into various teams over the next few weeks as the Bears prepare for the draft and to draft ninth in the first round in late April. Their goal is to determine what position will have the most impact on that pick for the team, not only for the short-term future, but also the long-term future of the franchise. And so the groups are going to be broken up into positional groups. So it'll be a group that will be kind of scouting and suggesting you got to go with a wide receiver with the ninth pick. There's going to be another team that's going to be looking at edge rushers. Say, okay, you need to take a defensive end with this ninth pick. And then there's going to be another team that's looking at offensive linemen. Okay, There's an offensive lineman. And all the different groups, the teams that Ryan Poles puts together here, they're going to make their pitch to him on why the Bears should go with that position and that player with the ninth overall pick. I agree with the way you laid it out, Tyler. I agree with how Patrick Finley's put this in the Sun Times, and I agree with your thoughts saying that this is great to see that this is the way it's working. And in the past for this team, it has felt as if the GM was like a lone wolf going on his own, making his own decisions and not really having a checks and balances and taking on opinions from other people. Like, isn't that a part of a great management style as well is the fact that Ryan Poles trusts those around him. And so he's giving them the ability to give their opinions because he trusts that they're good at what they do to help him look good. And it all is a collaborative effort. And it all makes sense. And it all makes the Chicago Bears much better overall, where in the past it was one person sneaking off, going and watching a Mitch Trubisky at the Sun Bowl and not telling anyone what you actually think. So someone could say, hey, man, that's actually crazy. There's actually a couple other quarterbacks here that look like they can actually play and not just, can make a nice dinner reservation for you while he drives a beat-up Toyota Camry. Like, I think we should go in a different direction. So I like this. If it were for me, the way I would want to pitch this, if I was making a pitch to Ryan Poles, is I'm going wide receiver if one of the two guys falls to me. I'm not moving up for wide receiver.
I'm with you.
And then if the wide receivers are off the board and you're sitting there at 9 and you can project that someone needs to move up because 3 wide receivers are off the board, because 4 quarterbacks have gone off the board, and you can get a defensive end at, say, 11 or 12, and you can move back, that's the way I would handle it. Those are my two options that I would suggest.
I just see, I have a hard time thinking that there is going to be a lot of interest in that 9th pick, because it seems like, by all accounts, and a lot of things can change, like we saw all the Will Levis smoke last draft, but it feels like you're really only getting a monster haul back if someone's trading up for a quarterback. And who would be that 5th quarterback? Is it Bo Nix, Michael Penix? But I feel like teams probably aren't trading up with the Bears at 9 to get that player.
Let me paint this scenario for you. Mm-hmm. This week, there has been a lot of conversation about J.J. McCarthy. So if you believe what you've seen from the actual games, I don't think J.J. McCarthy is a top 3 pick.
I'm with you.
I would be surprised if teams are going to jump up into the top 5 to select J.J. McCarthy. And there are teams from 11 through 14 that need a quarterback for the future.
For sure.
Vikings at 11, the Broncos at 12, the Raiders at 13, and the Saints at 14. I'm not saying that you're getting a haul moving out of 9. But if you're able to move out of 9 and collect a 3rd-round pick, mm-hmm. or just something, a 4th-rounder, so you move back to 12, you move back to 13, you get an additional pick, I think that's something the Bears should take advantage of. You know, just kind of like the way that they handled the end of the top 10 last year.
Yeah, with Jalen Carter.
Moving back just a little to get something, but they still get their guy. They're still 10th overall. Like, if they were able to move to 11, and it's the Vikings that move to 9, first, I think I would see that it'd be a little hard to see the Bears help out a division rival in getting a quarterback, but maybe it's 12. Mm-hmm. You move back to 12 and you can still select Jared Verse at that spot and you get like a 3rd or a 5th round pick from the Broncos. I would be all for that.
Yeah.
I don't think it needs to be a quote haul of picks, a treasure trove of picks, you know?
But I think you're doing that if you still think you're getting your guy at 11 or 12 or 14 or whatever pick you trade back to. I don't
The Broncos have 3 5th-round picks. Mm-hmm. They have no 2nd-rounders. They have 1 3rd-rounder. They have a 4th-rounder. And they have 3 5th-round picks. So they have some assets that if you want that spot, if you want to move up 3, you could get something from the Broncos.
Stuff can be had there. I think that this Bears team, I want to see picks accumulated. If we are trading back, looking for day 2 picks. Because day 3, it seems like, is not very interesting to a lot of these teams this year. It's why Ryan Poles has traded his 4th, his 5th, his 6th, his 7th round picks. Because it seems like, because of NIL and the fact that a lot of players are staying in college, it's a record low in terms of underclassmen that are entering the draft this year. Because of that, you're seeing there not be as much talent in the later portions of the draft.
I was surprised that Ryan Poles said that on Wednesday. This is Ryan Poles. He was asked on Wednesday when he met the media about only having four picks heading into this year's draft. This is what Ryan Poles had to say.
I do. We've looked at that. You know, if we don't move at all, I think that's 25 picks in 3 years, which is over, you know, eight and some change. So I like where we're at there. On top of, you know, being set up next year to have a pretty good setup as well. And I think it matches the draft. I think a lot of guys went back to school this year. I think you're going to see a significant drop off. You know, hopefully some guys squeak through. But it actually, the way we're set up in the draft this year actually pairs up really well with how I think it's going to play out.
Pretty surprising. I didn't expect Ryan Poles to come out and say that, you know, the later rounds of this year's draft, not going to be great. I was surprised by that. I didn't think that that's something I would hear from the GM. And I always assume that teams want to load up on picks because they're cheaper players.
Right.
So even if it's, quote, a down year, that roster spot on a rookie deal, if it's in the fifth, sixth, or seventh round, is less expensive than someone else you sign in free agency or to retain on your team. So, like, I've always thought of the way of team building is the more picks you can get, the better, as long as you're hitting on 70% of them and they're turning into viable players that could start or at least give you snaps. I was surprised by Ryan Poles saying that.
But it makes sense, like, the way that NIL is right now, and if you look at the trend since NIL's been enacted, which was in 2021, and you see the number of early entrants into the class, it was over 100 in 2021. I think it says 130 in 2021. There's 58 this year. Yeah. That number's been slashed more than in half. And it's Ohio State's the prime example of that. You look at, they had guys with first and second round grades that went back to school. And I just think that those guys later that you're going to be getting, you're going to be looking at guys that have played 5 or 6 years in college football. And while that's good in some regard, there's a reason why they played 5 or 6 years in college football and are still only regarded as a fifth, sixth, or seventh rounder.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it'll be fascinating to see how the Bears kind of head into it, because at the moment, the Bears have four picks. They have the two in the first round, the first and the ninth. They then don't have a pick in the second. They have one pick in the third, the 11th pick overall in the third round, and then they have a fourth rounder, the 22nd pick in the fourth round. That's it. But then you listen to Ryan Poles say that in the first 3 years of drafting as Bears GM, he would then acquire 25 players. And for the most part, you know, we were going over some of the names the last couple of days. Like, Velus Jones Jr. is essentially the only total miss. Mm-hmm. And the guy's still on the roster. It's not like they cut him.
Right.
Now, whether or not he makes it through training camp next season, I don't know. But at the moment, he's on the roster. For the most part, Ryan Poles has done a pretty good job of adding players who he can use through the draft. I don't know if there's any superstars in there, but he's getting guys who are playing, especially
right.
defensively.
Braxton Jones, I think. I mean, you brought up defensive guys, but Braxton Jones on the offensive side.
A fifth rounder who has been starting for you, that is very solid work. The defensive guys, Jaquan Brisker, Kyler Gordon, I mean, these
Tyreek
players.
Tyreek Stevenson.
These are players who are making an impact week to week. So, like, That's really good work by him. But, yeah, I mean, I was surprised when he said, well, you know, it'll be 25 players in 3 years, and I'm not really worried about the later rounds in this year's draft.
Yeah, I think especially when you have 1 and 9, like, those are premium picks in an NFL draft. Not only are you getting the first overall pick, the draft runs through you, but to also to have a second top 10 pick, you're talking about picking up two guys who are supposed to be impact starters for you on day one. And that is, I think, is really important. If I'm getting those two guys, it lessens for me the need to have to go out and hit on a guy with that's sitting in the third, fourth, fifth round. Like, those are nice surprises, I feel like. Maybe guys who start or guys who are like high-end depth pieces, maybe trying to phase out another position who you've got an aging starter in. But to have a guy at 1 and 9, you're talking about premium guys within that draft that are supposed to be impact players, not just for you that year, but you want those guys on your roster for a decade.
Stars.
Yeah.
You need to draft stars in the top 10. We were talking last night about Ryan Poles' approval rating. What would you put it? I give him like an 85% approval rating for the GM.
I would probably be...
I believe Chase said 80%.
I would probably be higher than both of you. I'd probably be in like the range of 88 to 90 right now if we're grading him out like that, because like, sure, the Claypool thing is a dud, right?
Yeah.
But like, what are the other really bad marks that he has? You can say Roquan, but at least he recouped a lot of the Roquan stuff.
I don't even look at Roquan as a negative, to be honest, because he went out in free agency and signed two linebackers for the same price, who, and one of them who overperformed his contract they just signed, TJ Edwards,
fantastic.
Was way better than what he signed for.
Might have been the best signing of the offseason.
One of the best linebackers in the NFC last year, and he was outstanding. You know, going through it, I pointed out the issues at center. Clearly was a problem last year, and that you know, I kind of broke it down between his moves in free agency, his trades he's made, and the draft. You know, for free agency, it's not like he's signed anyone that's been a total bust. He hasn't spent a lot of money on someone who couldn't play, someone who got injured, someone who couldn't be around. Through trades, Chase Claypool was a bad trade, and we kind of debated whether or not the Justin Fields trade was bad, because originally we thought he would get a lot more for Fields, mm-hmm. and then he didn't, but theoretically...
But that's not his fault.
I could also put the Fields trade in the good category, because by trading Fields, you have now opened up the ability to draft Caleb Williams, and I think that in the end run, when we look at Ryan Poles, is probably going to be the move that cements his legacy as Bears GM.
Think about
it's going to be the move of drafting Caleb Williams. That's it.
Think about the cap hell this team was in 2 years ago. And for him to go out, flip Mac, out, flip Quinn, flip Robert or Roquan Smith, all of that put together, and those were three stars on your defense, to go get rid of those guys, infuse a ton of cash, so it gives you flexibility to go out and make a trade for Montez Sweat. You don't have that flexibility if you haven't created all that cap space. And I think the Jalen Johnson signing, I know it's a re-signing, but to get him on what I think is a pretty crafty deal that helps out both the team and the situation that your team is in by front loading that deal and giving you yourself some flexibility if it doesn't work out down the road, I think that's the best part of what he's done, is he's created a lot of escape valves for himself. And the fact that we're sitting here in year three with a team that has a chance to make the playoffs if everything hits with the rookie quarterback, I think you got to be pretty happy with where you are as a Bears fan.
Yeah.
And the way that this team has kind of flipped completely on its head since that 2021 season, I think it's a lot of credit to Ryan Poles. I really like what he's done.
That's Tyler Aki. I'm Chris Bleck. Tyler's in for Abdallah tonight. We're taking your calls at 312-332-3776. Your thoughts on the ninth pick in the draft. What should the Bears do? We'll talk to you next.
You're listening to Bleck and Abdallah. ESPN Chicago.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
I'd like you to meet someone who's really special.
It's Bleck and Abdallah.
A real inspiration.
Follow us on the gram at Bleck and Abdallah and at ESPN _ Chicago.
Tyler Rocky's here in for Adam Abdallah.
You're gonna start Chris Blunt.
No, we're good. That would be fun, though.
Let's do it.
Maybe one day you'll find out what that's about. Jimmer and Woodridge, you're on ESPN 1000 Talking Bears. What's up, Jimmer?
Hey, guys. What's going on? Hey, so I'm just going to give you, like, two scenarios I really like for the ninth. You know, I was listening to Carmen Yurk the other day, and if Joe Alt's there, and he probably won't be, but if he's there, you got to take him. And then, Black, you know, you said you want Romeo. Yeah. You know, I think that's, like, the sexy, like, you want him. Like, I don't really want him, but everyone else wants him. I think you have to help Fuels Eberflus on the defense. I do like trading back. If you can still get a top two, you know, defensive end, because let's face it, you know, you guys got to have somebody else on besides Sweat.
Sure.
So that's why I like going defense for sure. And also, you can try and get, like, a number three, and possibly another wide receiver with that third pick. So I just want to say thanks for taking my calls.
No problem, Jimmer.
Thanks, Jimmer.
Thanks, man. Thanks for the phone call. I'm out on alt. I'm out on alt.
Well, I don't think it's going to be an issue. I don't think this is going to be a question when we get there. If you're going to feed me one of the other offensive tackles, all right, I'm willing to discuss it. I'm not putting it high on my list of priorities. My whole thing of why I've always been, and this was before the Keenan Allen trade more so, but why I've always been out on an offensive tackle at 9 is because of this. The drop-off between what used to be Tyler Scott and what you would be drafting with a Roma Dunze or Malik Nabers or DeMarcus Walker versus whatever edge rusher you like there is far bigger than the improvement I think you would be getting between Braxton Jones and whatever offensive tackle you draft.
This city is obsessed with offensive line play. Obsessed. Mm-hmm. The offensive line, if they fix the center position, I'm good with who they have across the board outside of center. And that Ryan Poles went out. He made a trade for a center, and he signed a center. Mm-hmm. So you got two new bodies in there. If that works, I'm good with Braxton Jones. I'm good with Wright. I'm good with Jenkins. I'm good with Davis. I'm good. I don't need to draft and use my 9th pick on a tackle.
Know what? If Braxton Jones isn't good enough, you're going to have a first-round pick next year. You can go out and draft. It's not like this is the last draft of all football time.
Tyler's right. You need a more impactful player than a tackle at that spot.
But you got to win in the trenches.
And first of all,
this is a blue collar city.
Can win in the trenches.
Z-Pack, I want to bring this up. I don't want to out you on this, but did you hear it in the last call? Did you hear what he called Rome Odunze?
Yes.
He called him Romeo Odunze.
He also called you Chris Black.
Well, that happens a lot. Kevin, what did you share with me yesterday?
Yeah, I'll own up to this. So up until about a couple months ago. No, it was longer ago than that. It was like bowl season. I thought the young man's name was Roma Odunze.
Roma
Odunze.
Roma, like the football Roma. Team. Yeah, the soccer team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Roma Odunze.
And that's great. We just got a Romeo Odunze.
Yeah.
Roma
well, now,
Romeo.
Now I know it.
Yeah. Roma Odunze. I mean, he's only, what, he was the second best wide receiver, third best wide receiver in college football last year.
Oh, yeah. I watched so much college football, guys.
Z-Pack, we know you're watching the late night Pac-12 games.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's College Tailgate.
Well,
really appreciate it, Z-Pack.
You know what? I did see Caleb Williams versus Notre Dame, so he must stink.
All right. That's for you. We go to Mark in Lincoln Park. You're on ESPN 1000. Hello, Mark.
What's up, guys?
What's going on?
You're giving CPAC the music.
You know what? He deserves it.
Captain Mayo deserved
over there.
A little music there.
That was crazy. He's not Captain Mayo. CPAC's a great addition. Stop.
Well, yeah.
The young guys. Tyler, first of all, happy birthday.
Thank you, Mark.
Invite your girlfriend to Bavette's or Chicago Cut for a burger after the show. Yeah, celebrate it, dude. Well, it beats the alternative. You should embrace your birthday, Black. Come on.
I don't like the attention on something that everyone gets.
No. But right? What you do as you get older, Chris, you'll find out. Mm. You invite people out to a bar, and you're like, "Hey, drinks on me," and you're gonna love it.
Well, yeah, I don't mind that. I'm cool with that.
I want no attention. I just want.
I don't want the attention or the gifts, but sure, I'll buy a round.
Correct. Yes.
I'm done with that.
All right. So, Tyler, the reason I called, I heard you going off on Waddle last night. By the way, you can tell Shay I went to the Peanut Barrel with my kid in Michigan State. It was fun.
Oh, good. Was it good?
Yeah, it was very. It's a college bar. You know.
Oh, so it was a bad recommendation from Shay? No surprise.
Mm-hmm. No, Shay didn't give that one.
Common
Shay.
To
the total, like, goober ones. Shay was yelling. I was trying to bring him down. Tyler, the owners just had a meeting, right? They changed rules. They did this. They did that. You're wanting to change an entirely different marketing format of a divisional play and whatnot. I hear you. I hear your things. I would acquiesce to the owners. They have one of the most successful franchises on the planet. They're not willing to change to what you want. Does that make sense? Meaning you want, hey, I want the best seven teams in the playoffs. The owners know market. The NFL owners, I've told my company this, that fly to every mainline city, the NFL marketer guys have already decided it for you. There should not be a mainline jet that doesn't fly to every single city, sans Green Bay, in a regional jet. It should all be mainline. Chicago, Atlanta. You should never take a regional jet to a small city. Does that make sense? The NFL knows what they know. They're the best. They're not going to acquiesce to the best seven teams. They love divisional. They love conference play.
Okay, we got you. Yeah, we're listening. Yeah.
Does that make, like, they've done a marketing analysis on this. They're a multi-billion dollar organization that has more than all three of the other bigs combined. And I get it, Tyler. I know you want the best, but they know regional markets want the controversy of, boy, Chicago hates Green Bay. Boy, Cleveland hates Cincinnati and Pittsburgh. But let's pinch this off against each other. Does that make sense to you guys?
Yeah, it makes sense to me. Go ahead.
I get that part of it.
Mark. Thanks for the phone call.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Mark. Like, I get that part of it. And I'm not trying to get rid of the rivalries.
Sounds like you're trying to kill them.
I'm trying. You know what? Why don't we just stop playing football forever?
Sometimes with your generation, it seems like that's what you want to do. Is you don't even want the competition. You
don't
want
anything. Competition.
No, go ahead and say what you're going to say.
No, like I get that you want the regional rivalries and all that stuff, and I think you'll still get them. This is just going to be one of those things that, like, once every 7 to 10 years, you'll see it pop up, and I think it's worth not letting in a sub 500 team in the playoffs. Like, that's all I want. I didn't think this was going to strike as big of a nerve as it did. I mean, we're talking about 2 days worth of conversation that we've somehow gotten out of this.
People don't like just changing everything.
I don't think people like me in general now.
No, I think it's the division comment. I can understand wanting to take the best teams to get into the playoffs. I totally get that. That makes a lot of sense. I just think the more you water down the sports and say there are no divisions, it's only about the championship, I think that there are very few franchises in professional sports today that are actively chasing championships every single year. So many teams are selling a load of BS about rebuilds and hope, and we got to build it, and then they build, and then nothing ever happens, and then there's another rebuild, and then you look over, and the Chicago Bulls are four games under, and they're still telling you about they're building up something of mediocrity or whatever. There's not enough teams that are actively trying to win championships, so you have to set your sights on something as a sports fan. Not everyone can win a championship every year.
Now,
and I'm not expecting all my teams to always be winning championships, but it would be nice if you're at least competing for something, and I think the divisions allow you to have those rivalries and to have things that actually matter sometimes if you aren't a team chasing a championship.
Now, you're not going to like this comment, but the way that sports are moving, it feels like fans are shifting towards becoming fans of teams to becoming fans of players, whether it's because of fantasy football, jersey sales, all that stuff, YouTube highlights, everything. It feels like we're in that shift. Like, if we talk about the biggest rivalries in football right now, like, Bears and Packers is a great rivalry, but I think people are more intrigued by the Mahomes versus Allen rivalry, the Mahomes versus Burrow rivalry, what we had with Manning and Brady, those rivalries. And I think that's what's more intriguing to the overall health of the league is that shift. And I think that's where, like, more of these rivalries are born in the playoffs now.
Well, and the reason they're born in that spot is because they've faced off against each other multiple years in a row, and thus creating the hostility, the rivalry, the excitement.
Didn't it suck that we didn't get a Mahomes versus Burrow in the playoffs this year?
Yeah,
what if Burrow could have come back in, and the Bengals, who finished with 9 or 10 wins this year but didn't get into the playoffs, what if they lost out on that opportunity because we let an 8-9 team in.
You're so concerned about a team that has a sub 500 record.
Sub 500, like,
I see. Like, here's where I would go back to with the rivalries. The geographical divisional rivalries mattered when teams were facing off against each other multiple times in the play or fighting for playoffs. That's how you really brew a good rivalry. Mm-hmm. Like when you have teams who are a bunch of losers, the rivalries are
means nothing.
Not that interesting. Right. So
you see those more, I feel like, collegiately than yeah, professionally.
But like that's where, so your point to Mahomes and Allen, Mahomes, Burrow, well, it's because the Bills, the Chiefs, and the Bengals in the last 4 to 5 years, those three teams have been in the mix as two or the three last ones standing in the conference for this period of time that we're currently living in, which has created an appetite to see these matchups. Where, you're right, the way sports is going to this point, with people following individual players, it waters it down because then when you get a rivalry matchup, Packers-Vikings, but none of the players were there from the year before and they're going to leave the next year to go somewhere else and it's all just player movement and they're all friends, then the same appetite to watch these two teams play because there's a hatred there, it's only in the stands.
Right.
It's not actually on the field where back in the day, it used to be because those players did not like playing against the other players that they saw a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the rivalries were fun. That's why, you know, you look back at the great 90s era Bulls with Jordan and Pippen and, mm-hmm. and Robin. Like, the Jordan Bulls had rivalries because they faced off against the Knicks every year in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And they hated them. Like, that was great. Same with the Pistons mm-hmm. until they beat them. And then there goes the Pistons. Like, those were rivalries because there was some aggression. There was some hate behind it on right. the court. Like, that doesn't, you're right. In sports today, it's very few and far between where you get that. You get individual players that don't like each other, and that, like, bubbles up once mm-hmm. in a while, but you don't get full teams that just hate the other team.
Right. I think that part of it is kind of, like, we've lost it. And like, I think the perfect example
have.
Of this, like, think about when the Bulls were last really good. I'm talking about the Derrick Rose Bulls.
Yeah. The
Derrick Rose Bulls didn't hate a team, per se.
They hated
LeBron.
Yeah.
And that's the way that sports have shifted now. You're battling, you're seeing player-driven rivalries. And that, to me, is where we're seeing the league, not just one in particular league, all of sports. I don't know. It's just the way that younger people kind of watch the sport, fantasy sports, all that stuff. I think it's kind of boiled it down to we are rooting more for players now as opposed to teams as much.
He's Tyler Aki. I'm Chris Bleck. It's Bleck and Abdallah here on ESPN 1000. We're going to get Tyler's preview for the remaining games in the Sweet 16. We're going to get that preview coming up next.
Bleck and Abdallah, ESPN Chicago, Chicago's home for sports. You're listening to Bleck and Abdallah on ESPN Chicago, Chicago's home for sports. Follow the show on Twitter at Chris Bleck and at Adam A. Abdallah.
Bleck and Abdallah here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Keeping our eyes on the NCAA tournament, Clemson, Arizona is now a 3-point game, 49-46. Clemson leads with 13:30 left in the second half. At halftime, UConn leads San Diego State 40-31. Tyler Aki is here. He's one half of Basketball U. You can hear the guys, Shea Norling and Tyler Aki, Saturday mornings, 8 a.m. right here on ESPN 1000 throughout the rest of the tournament. And Tyler is here to break down the rest of the Sweet 16. Okay. Thoughts on the games that are going on at this moment. Close one between Clemson, Arizona, and UConn at the half with a 9-point lead.
So I really thought Clemson would give Arizona a good game today because of the fact that Arizona has been a super inconsistent team all year long. When they're at their best, they look like they can be the best team in the entire country. But when they're not, they are susceptible to be beat by anyone. And Clemson kind of has that formula of a team that could beat Arizona. They're a veteran team, lots of experience there. They're 26th in the entire country in experience. They shoot the ball well. They're great from the free throw line. They're a balanced offensive and defensive team. They're not elite at either, but they're a balanced team in that regard. And I thought that's kind of the perfect formula to beat a team like Arizona. And we're seeing it right now as they have a slight lead over the Wildcats right now. As for the other game.
Yeah, UConn.
UConn has been one of the best teams that we've seen in the sport so far this season. But so far in this tournament, I haven't been as, and it's not that I haven't been impressed by them.
You haven't been wowed?
But no, there's just other teams that I think have been better than them this tournament. I think Purdue's been better than them. I think Duke's been better than them. I think Gonzaga's looked better than them. I think North Carolina and Illinois have all looked better than them so far. UConn played against, they had the 116 matchup, and then they had the Northwestern game where they blew out Northwestern, but let the Wildcats come back into it a little bit towards the end of the game. So I think the San Diego State game, if they really blow out the Aztecs, then maybe I'm changing my tune a little bit. But right now, among the one seeds, I think they're sitting third among those one seeds. I think that Purdue has been the most impressive team to me in the tournament right now.
Okay.
And I think Carolina's looked really strong as well, and they've got a big game tonight.
All right, so UConn at the half, they lead San Diego State 40-31. Coming up at 8:39, that game will be on CBS. The fourth seed Alabama will face off against the number one seed North Carolina. So that's a game in the West region, Alabama, North Carolina. That game's going to tip off at about 8:39 tonight. Who do you like in that one?
I do like the Tar Heels in that game. I just look at defensively, UNC is so good. And if Alabama isn't firing, like Alabama, I think, is going to find themselves in situations. Now, they got the benefit of playing a lesser opponent in Grand Canyon last game. But they seem like one of those teams to me when they get into this Sweet 16 and Elite 8 level of basketball. If they can't score 100 points, they're not going to win because their defense just is not good enough. And you look at some of the games that they've lost, they've been weird games, and they've lost to some good defenses along the way. I think that's where you saw a lot of the shortcomings for Alabama this season is, we can't score 100 points, so it's kind of a tough game for us to win. Or we can't score 90 points, and it's kind of tough for us to win. You're not going to be able to do that against Carolina. Unless this team is scoring 95 points, I don't see them beating North Carolina because North Carolina's defense is great and their offense far outmatches what Alabama has defensively.
The final of four games tonight will be at 9:09. That is Illinois, the third seed in the East region, against the two seed Iowa State. That game's going to be played at the TD Garden in Boston. So Illinois, Iowa State, 9:09 this evening. The late game, the Illini and the Cyclones. Who's going to win this one? And before you answer that, you mentioned the teams that have impressed you the most throughout the tournament and how UConn hasn't matched what Purdue or North Carolina has done to this point. I think Illinois' two wins to this point have been pretty impressive. I was surprised at how smooth things have gone for the Illini so far.
I'm with you there. Illinois has been probably one of the five best teams I think we've seen in this tournament so far. Now, you do have to take into account the path. They played Morehead State, and then they played Duquesne. I think that's an important part when you're kind of breaking down what they've done so far. But
sometimes the games are supposed to be easy in the tournament,
right?
are those like surprising Cinderella situations. Ask Kentucky about that.
Right, and in fairness, they've won by 16 and 26 in those two games. So they have not just taken care of business, but they've slaughtered business so far. And I'm going to give them a little more credit because they went out and won the Big Ten tournament. And they went through a pretty solid path to do so. They beat Ohio State. They beat Nebraska. They beat Wisconsin in the championship game there. All of these games have come on neutral sites as well. Now, I'm fascinated by this game because you've got the number one offense going up against the number one defense. And Illinois, to me, the difference for what they've been in the latter portion of the season, they're not a great defense, but they've turned it on defensively. And that's because Terrence Shannon Jr. has been back, and he's been one of the best defensive players in all of college basketball this season. So having him back in the lineup, having guys like Marcus Damask step up, having Dane Danger, who I think should be a little bit more of a cult hero for the tournament, like We've seen DJ Burns, like the big dude there. Everyone wanted Robbie Avila from Indiana State as like these funny big dudes. But Dane Danger is kind of that for Illinois. And he's had himself a nice tournament so far. So I think all of those guys together, I think Illinois goes out and wins this game. And Iowa State, I kind of put them in the same boat as what I've seen out of a team like Arizona, where there's just some puzzling losses for them at times. And they did go out and win the Big 12, but I just think Illinois' offense is going to be enough in this game to overcome Iowa State.
When we look to the four games tomorrow, North Carolina State, Marquette, Gonzaga, and Purdue, Duke, Houston, Creighton, and Tennessee, is there one of those matchups that you're looking forward to the most tomorrow?
By far, it's Creighton and Tennessee. And
interesting.
You look at what Creighton has done in this tournament. They kind of skated by. Really, that entire region is interesting to me because it's four teams who people have said for probably like 10, 15 years now, they just can't get over the hump. It's Gonzaga, it's Purdue, it's Tennessee, and it's Creighton.
Yeah.
And this is the chance for one of those four teams is going to the Final Four. And I think for narrative's sake, it'd be best if it wasn't Gonzaga. Because I think you look at the other three teams, and they've all had a lot of question marks, and they've really struggled to get to that Final Four. So I've been a huge fan of what Creighton's done throughout the tournament in comeback fashion against Oregon. I think that they are a highly efficient team on both sides of the ball. And in this game, to me, it's going to come down to the fact that Creighton's big man is much better than Tennessee's. Ryan Kalkbrenner is the Big East Defensive Player of the Year. He's been used in some really interesting sets. And here's a guy, Chris, when you watch this game that I think you'll be fascinated by. Baylor Shireman, 6'7" point guard. I'm not calling him Magic Johnson, but he plays a similar style where he's like this big guard. He's crafty,
smooth.
No look passes, very smooth with his game. And it feels like he hits all of these really timely three-pointers for them.
Okay.
I think that's a guy that you're really going to like watching.
I'm in. I'll definitely be watching. That's tomorrow night. That's the late game tomorrow night, 9:09. Tyler Aki will have Basketball U on Saturday morning with Shane Orling. You can hear the guys Saturday mornings, 8 a.m. every Saturday throughout the end of the NCAA tournament. Black and Abdallah here. Tyler's in with me today. Terry in Iowa, you're on ESPN 1000. Go ahead, Terry.
Tyler, salute to the Glenbrook South grad on the mic tonight.
Thank you. Go Titans.
Defend your bracket, man. It's bad.
Defend your bracket.
I entered it. It's awful.
Oh, no.
Terry, are you a Glenbrook South man?
I am.
Class of?
2002.
Okay.
defend your bracket.
Here's what I'll say.
Thanks, Terry.
Terry, my bracket has not been great this year. I'll fully admit it. However, we still have a champ. We still have three of four Final Four teams. We're not out of this.
Not dead.
I think the pivotal things that we need to happen are North Carolina to win it all, which could happen.
And Creighton needs to get
Creighton
to the Final
get
Four.
To the Final Four. If we get those two, because this is the bracket thing is a science. The bracket, if you pick your champion right, it's the equivalent of picking every single game in the round of 64 right. The points are tiered that way. So if we get North Carolina to win, we're going to make up a ton of points. If we get Creighton to the Final Four, we're going to make up a ton of points. I think we have a chance to surge here in the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight. But we're going to need North Carolina. Like, point blank. If we don't get North Carolina, we are dead men walking.
Defend your bracket. Come on, Tyler. To be fair, what was it? Two of the last 3 years you've won the office?
I have, yes.
Cool. So Tyler is very good at it. But at the moment, it looks a bit
a little
messy.
Dicey.
Tyler's Song of the Night coming up next.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah. ESPN Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. You're listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN Chicago, Chicago's home for sports. Listen to the show in HD at 100.3 HD2 FM.
Thank you to Kevin Zipak and Kendra Smith for producing tonight's show, Black and Abdallah. Tomorrow night, Tyler will be back with Black and Abdallah tomorrow night. He'll be solo from 6:30 to 8. So all calls welcome. Friday night calls for Tyler. It's our birthday present to Tyler. Sir, you will get the calls tomorrow night, all for you.
Let's make them weird.
I will be with Yurko tomorrow morning, tomorrow afternoon from noon to 3 right here on ESPN 1000. So I'll be with Yurko. Tyler will be here by himself tomorrow night with your wacky calls. That's the promo. The wacky calls on a Friday night. We will get to the song of the night. Tyler picked it because it's his birthday. We will get to that in just 1 second. E and Bourbonnais, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, E?
Who's E and Bourbonnais, man? Steve and Bourbonnais. You all know me.
The screen says E, so I said E.
E, okay. I'm sorry.
But Steve and Bourbonnais, go ahead.
Hey, buddy.
Eberflus.
No, the tournament's great. Go Illini. Can't wait for tonight. I was a huge Justin fan, and we're taking Caleb number one. We're taking Caleb number one and the best overall at number nine. Hope it's Roman Dunsett. Anyhow, I don't know. Love the show.
Okay.
Hey, thank you. I lost my point. I didn't want to fight you guys on a couple of things, but I can't even remember right now.
Steve, sorry to throw you off with the E.
All good, Steve.
You're good, my man.
Yeah, you're good.
All right. I know I'm good. Yeah. All right. Thanks, Steve.
That's Steve.
Time for the song of the night.
I want to rock!
Hey, turn up the volume and don't touch that dial because it's time
Friday
for...
Friday came early.
There's no dial on my phone.
Yeah, it's just an...
The wacky calls right for Tyler tomorrow.
Because it's time for Bleck and Abdallah's song of the night.
Yo, later.
Tonight's song, we go to Luke Combs, Where the Wild Things Are, from 2023. It's your song of the night.
My big brother rode an Indian scout. It was black like his jacket. American spirit hanging out of his mouth. Just like our daddy. He kick-started that bike one night and broke mama's heart. He pointed that headlight west, out where the wild things are. He'd call me up every couple of weeks from South California. Talk about the desert and the Joshua tree. His pretty girl stories. And how he bought an Airstream trailer and a J45 guitar. Said, little brother, you'd love it out here. Out where the wild things are.
Where the Wild Things Are is your song of the night tonight. And the reason we have selected it, it's your birthday. And here at the radio station, they send out a survey with a bunch of different questions. One of the questions was, what song should everyone go listen to right now? And your response today for your birthday was Where the Wild Things Are by Luke Combs. Why?
Well, and also because Abdallah's not here. Abdallah would have hard vetoed this song. We all know that.
He would have hated all over this. And then he would have acted like he likes Luke Combs after the fact.
Yep.
He would have been just super annoying with this. So we are flying high with Luke Combs tonight.
I only knew
Z-Pack.
I only knew we could do this song because it was the two of us. I'm a big Luke Combs fan. I'm actually became a big Luke Combs fan probably like last summer-ish.
Okay.
So I missed out on the Soldier Field concert. He is going up to Milwaukee in a couple of weeks. I want to say it's like him, Jordan Davis, a couple others up there in
Milwaukee.
Where
are they playing? Miller Park?
They're playing, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But yeah, I've just become a big Luke Combs fan. And I believe like a lot of Bears, I think Matt Eberflus is a big Luke Combs guy too.
During training camp last year, wasn't there an article where they talked about how when Eberflus got the pick, he had like a Luke Combs day at practice or something?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It was like Luke Combs, Morgan Wallen, and someone else that he like, those were
I
like.
I can't remember the third, but yeah. Mm-hmm. That was
That story, and I was like, all right, Eberflus. All right.
Listen, that walked so the new do-up could run. That's what it was. That was the beginning.
Listen, I think sometimes people hear that country music has like a certain stigma to it, but to me, it's like it's modern rock music now.
It is, yeah.
Most of it is
soothing now, summer tunes.
If you get a banjo and you get some, you know, talking about your trucks and your dog and whatnot, then yeah, I get the stereotypes. But yeah, Luke Combs is fantastic. Where the Wild Things Are, 2023. It's your song of the night, and happy birthday to Tyler Aki.
Thank you.
Where the wild things are. Where the wild things are.
I wanna rock. Hey, turn up the volume and don't touch that dial because it's time for...
What dial? There's no dial on my phone.
Yeah, it's just an... never mind. Crank the volume because it's time for Bleck and Abdullah's Song of the Night.
Yo, Lick.
CZ Packets, not so bad.
What'd you think, Captain Mayo?
Terrible. God awful. Take a lap.
Take a lap? All right. Tyler, have a good show tomorrow night, 6:30. Tyler will be here for your calls on a Friday night.
Chicago's home for sports. Black and Abdallah. ESPN Chicago.